We're on week four of the series that is titled, We Starts With Me. And this is a series where we're looking at what the church is, what the church should be doing, and how the church is supposed to be doing it. You see, we like to think that church should be a certain way, or church should be doing certain things, or they shouldn't be doing certain things. And we can sit here and we can complain. We can sit here and we can say it shouldn't be that way or it should be this way. But really, the Bible describes that church is not a building. Church is not a location. Church is a group of Jesus followers. This is what makes us a church. When you are in here, when you are a part of this, that's why we say this is the Focus family. We are the church, and we would still be the church if this building wasn't here. We might be out in the parking lot or across the street at a school or something, but it's the group of people that make up the church. We are the church. And if we want to see the church do something different, then the church has to do something different, and that all starts with us individually. We are the church, and we starts with me. We got to do something. Today, as we are looking at God's word, we're looking at this idea of being offended. Being offended. And let me just say this about being offended, to just kick this off and just show you where we're going with this. You know, my offendability level, what it takes for me to be offended, is an indicator of the level of my spiritual maturity. Now, as we go through this sermon, I just want to make a note that this message is influenced by another pastor. His name's Robert Madu, and I ask that you not be offended that I borrowed some of his material. It's a test. Or as Admiral Akbar says, I heard it. It's a trap. Now, if you came today looking for hope, for peace, for purpose, for focus to your life, then I've got some really good news for you. There is hope found in Jesus. And at the end of this message, I'm going to give you an opportunity to receive that hope. I'd like for you to turn in your Bibles today to Matthew chapter 15. We're going to be reading out the New Living Translation. When you came in today, you should have received a bulletin. And inside that bulletin, there's a half sheet of notes where you can follow along with today's message. There's some fill-in-the-blanks where you can fill in the answers, pay attention, see where we're at, see when he's finally going to be done with this message. But we invite you to take these notes, work on them, fill them out. And if you look, if you take your notes out right now, flip them over to the back side, you'll notice that there's a box near the top in the middle that says something that I want to remember. My challenge to you today, I have two challenges for you. One, that you would write something in that box, something that stands out to you today. That you would write something in there. Last week, somebody came up to me after church, and they showed me that they wrote something in that box, and I told them they got brownie points. And they're like, where's the brownies, right? But the other thing I'm going to challenge you with today is that these notes are not just for you to use today and throw away tomorrow, but we want you to save them. We want you to pick a day later on this week and pull them back out, reread this passage in Matthew chapter 15, look at these points, and say, God, speak to me again through this. We want you to find out for yourself what God's word says. We're reading out of Matthew chapter 15, verses 21 through 28, and you can follow along in your Bible, you can follow along on the Bible app, or you can follow along with the words that are on the screen. It says this, "Then Jesus left Galilee and went north to the region of Tyre and Sidon. A Gentile woman who lived there came to him, pleading, 'Have mercy on me, O Lord, son of David. For my daughter is possessed by a demon that torments her severely.' But Jesus gave her no reply, not even a word. Then his disciples urged him to send her away. 'Tell her to go away,' they said. 'She is bothering us with all her begging.' Then Jesus said to the woman, 'I was sent only to help God's lost sheep, the people of Israel.' But she came and worshiped him, pleading again, 'Lord, help me.' Jesus responded, 'It isn't right to take food from the children and throw it to the dogs.' And she replied, 'That's true, Lord. But even dogs are allowed to eat the scraps that fall beneath their master's table.' 'Dear woman,' Jesus said to her, 'your faith is great. Your request is granted.' And her daughter was healed 2 weeks from that point. Oh, I'm sorry. Her daughter was healed the next year. Her daughter was healed tomorrow. No, it says her daughter was instantly healed. Let's pray. God, we just read your word, and we ask that your word would speak to our hearts and speak to our minds today, Lord, that we would be challenged and changed. Show us, each of us, what you have for us today. In Jesus' name we all said, amen. When I was in fifth grade and this tall, literally, my family moved from Florida, where I had spent the previous 7 years, all the way to the other side of the planet, to England. And I didn't quite realize it, but it rocked my world to go to change schools, to change environments, to lose all my friends, to go to someplace new. And it had me on edge to go to a new elementary school in the middle of the school year where everybody's already established. They already have friends. They already have ways of doing things. And here I am, the new person. I don't know where I fit in. And I'm kind of mad and angry at the same time. And I'm just like, ah! And what's worse, I'm trying to make friends. But you know what kids are doing? They're pointing out things I already know about myself, like I'm this high. And when they're doing it, it's like I'm hypersensitive to confrontation. I get agitated to the point that, hey, it's like, bring it on. You want to insult me? Insult me one more time. See where that gets you. And it got me riled up to the point as a fifth grader that somebody said something one too many times, and I got into my first and only fight in school on the playground. Now, the good thing is that I'm 1-0 for school ground fights. Even though I was little, I had so much pent-up anger and frustration. Oh, man. Because I was just so offended that they would pick on me for my size and not realize who I was as a person. You know, after we left England, we went to Texas. And I found something about Texas that Texans like their country. I'm not talking about USA. I'm talking about Texas. They believe it's their own country. But there was a saying and phrase that I would hear there in Texas. It would go something like this. Them's fighting words. That there is something that somebody could say that would trigger, saying, we're fighting. We're doing something. I'm offended. We're going to do something about it. We're going to meet out back. Them's fighting words. Everyone's offended. Everyone's, that seems to be what's going around in our society today. Everyone's offended about something. You're offended. And if you're not offended, I'm offended. You're not offended. Right? It's getting kind of ridiculous. I mean, there's organizations out there who are trying to help us because of people's offenses and being offended. They're wanting us to change the way we talk, to stop using anti-animal language. There's some organizations saying, hey, we need to take some common phrases that we use as part of our culture, and we need to rewrite them so we're not abusive to animals. Like, you know, the idea of kill two birds with one stone. This is real deal, okay? There's an organization that's wanted to push and say, hey, as a culture, how about we change it to feed two birds with one scone? They've gone further. You know the phrase, be the guinea pig? And they're saying, no, be the test tube. No animals. How about the idea of beating a dead horse? They don't want you to do that. They want you instead to say, feed a fed horse. What? How about the phrase, bring home the bacon? You know what they're proposing? Bring home the bagels. Yeah, there we go, yes. And then they're saying the phrase, take the bull by the horns. And they're saying, no, take the flower by the thorns. Oh, man. Has anybody here ever been offended? Okay, a few of you. You know, actually, it's probably every one of us. We all have a level of which we can be offended. And all it takes is just that certain subject to be brought up that we're okay, we're easygoing, everything. But there could be that one subject that someone talks about, or that one idea or that one event or something. And we just go, whoa. And it doesn't matter how spiritual you are. You could have came in today floating on water. You could have came in today, had manna for breakfast. But there, I promise you, there is a subject, there is something that if it is said or done or happens to you, you will be offended. I'm offended today that my fingers are too clean. I can't turn pages. It's frustrating me. Ah. You know, everyone's offended. We have races offended by other races. We have political parties offended by the other political parties. We have regions of the country offended by other regions. We have countries and nationalities offended by other nationalities. We have, it just, it's all across the board. There are just offenses everywhere. You know, Jesus said that this would happen. You know, he was talking to his disciples in Luke chapter 17, verse 1. He was saying this to his disciples, and if he was saying it to his disciples, he was saying it to us. And he says, it is impossible. I'm taking note. Hold on. He said, it is impossible. That means Jesus, the God of the universe, is saying that there is something impossible. And you may think, oh, it's impossible to heal somebody. It's impossible to deliver somebody. It's impossible to reconcile a marriage or relationship. It's impossible to bring somebody back from the dead. And no, that's not what Jesus is saying. He's saying it is impossible that no offenses should come. There are going to be things that are going to happen to you and to me that are offensive to us. They're going to rile us. They're going to be bad things to happen to us. They're going to rub us the wrong way. And Jesus is saying, hey, they're coming. But you know what? He goes on to share more about offenses. See, there was a point where the disciples were hanging out with Jesus, and they said, hey, Jesus, we want to know when all of the planet's going to end, when you're going to come back and when you're going to restore everything. We want to know about the end times. Can you give us some signs that we can look for the end times? And you can read all about the end times and the signs of what he was saying in Matthew chapter 24. It's an awesome chapter. And you look through and Jesus says, hey, nobody knows what time it's going to be. We can't predict it. He said, I don't even know it, but I can tell you the signs. Only the Father in heaven knows when the end is going to come. But he said, but I'm going to give you signs. Just like you know that it's almost time for harvest, just like we know that it's almost time to harvest corn because it's corn fest, right? The same way you can look at signs, that you can look at things happening around this planet and know that the end is coming. And so he starts listing off, you know, wars and rumors of wars and earthquakes and famines and there are people with false teachings and all these things going on. And we're like, wow, yeah. If you're really starting to do a little checklist, just as a side note, you can say, whoa, that's happened, that's happened, that's happened, that's happened. But there's one kind of slipped in sign that we overwrite, that we kind of overlook in this, and it's found in verse 10. And here's what he said. He said, one of the signs of the end times, it says, then many will be offended. They will betray and will hate one another. Whoa. Whoa. So he predicted the 21st century in America that we would all be offended. You know, trying to just do life right now is like playing the game of Operation. You remember the game of Operation? It was way before the game of Fortnite, okay? And in the game of Operation, there is this guy who needs surgery, and there's holes on different parts of his body, and you got to use tweezers to try to extract the bone out of his arm or the thing in his stomach, but there's metal lining the edges of that hole. And if you take the tweezers and you touch the edge of the hole, it makes a noise, and his nose lights up red. And it's kind of a perfect picture to illustrate our society and our culture right now. That it just takes a little bit, lights up red. Offended. Offended. So how quick do I get offended. If we said this indicates a level of our own spiritual maturity, it's an indicator, how quick do I get offended? In this passage, Jesus is passing through a Gentile area, a Gentile country. And just so you kind of know, Jesus was a Jew. He was from Israel. And anyone who is not a Jew, the Bible classifies as a Gentile, which just simply means not Jew or foreigner. And Israelites have a long-standing history of that the countries around them, they just don't get along. They kind of insult each other, and they just don't associate with each other. And here Jesus is, he's traveling, taking a shortcut, going through a Gentile region, and where he's staying at one place, a woman comes to him. The Bible describes in the passage we just read that it's a Gentile woman, but we find in some other translations it's a Canaanite woman. This Canaanite woman was purposefully going in to meet Jesus, believing that he was the answer and he was the only hope to help her daughter. Now think about this. She's going into a place where she knows the people hate her, and she normally hates them, but she believes that Jesus is the answer. And what would cause her to do something like this, to go someplace that she knows she's not liked or she is hated? It's because somebody's messing with her kid. I'll tell you what, it's not until you have kids that you realize what you would do for your kid. There's many a mama bear and papa bear who says, "You said what about my kid?" Them's fighting words, right? He's not ADHD, he's just creative. You're not occupying his time well. You know, we get riled up about our kids. And here's what's been happening is for this particular lady, her daughter's getting messed by the devil himself, tormenting her. And she has tried everything that she can to help her daughter and say, "Wow, they've been messing with my daughter. I've been trying everything I can, but I got to find some place where there's hope." And she heard about a guy by the name of Jesus. And then she found out he's traveling through the area. And she's like, "I'm going to go see him. If he is who he says he is, then he is the only hope and only answer for my daughter." She was willing to do anything for her child, even get over her own offense of being offended by going to a Jew. I mean, here's how bad it is with the society. That just getting into the presence of another person who was a Gentile caused that the rules of the Jewish faith was that you were then unclean and you had to do a ceremony washing up. I mean, it was a kind of a big deal. That's how offensive it was for you to be in the presence of a Gentile. And here this lady comes in to where Jesus is and his 12 disciples are there, and she begins yelling, saying, "Hey, Jesus, Son of David, Lord, have mercy on me. My daughter is being troubled by a demon. Can you help?" And you know what Jesus does? He ignored her. I mean, it said right there in the passage, Jesus gave her no reply, not even a word. You know, being ignored, that hurts. I mean, I think it might be one of the worst things that can happen. I think being ignored is worse than being rejected. Because when you're rejected, at least you know where you stand. But when you're ignored, you have no idea what's going on. I mean, it's like when you send that text message to a friend and it shows that they read it and you're like, "Come on, write back. I know you read it." We get offended. We're being ignored. It reminds me of my second oldest son, Regan. Regan's a special guy. He's actually here this morning, sitting in the back, monitoring what I'm actually going to say about him. I just asked for some creative license with him. He said, "Okay, Dad, just this once." You see, Regan is very particular about how things are done. And when he does not want to do something, he will not do it. However, he does not want to offend you by saying no. It's kind of a quirky thing about his personality. So if you ask him to do something when he does not want to do it, then what he does next is what Shelly and I have affectionately labeled as the T-Rex move. And what I'm talking about is from Jurassic Park, and when the T-Rex is attacking them, they say, "Hold still, don't move." And maybe the T-Rex won't notice that you're there and will give up and go on. And this is what Regan does to us. We ask him to do something. He stands still, and he's as quiet as can be. He doesn't reply. And we're like, "We see you standing there. We know you're there. You're ignoring us." The worst part is that sometimes it works. Here, Jesus is T-Rexing this woman, ignoring her. And this is the first offense. I mean, Jesus himself, I mean, you wouldn't expect this, but one of the first kinds of offenses that come up is this offense of being ignored. And being ignored hurts. And when somebody ignores us, we're like, "Forget you. You weren't worth it." Or we dream the worst case scenario, that they must hate us right now. That, "Oh, I knew it. This confirms my suspicion. They didn't like me, right? That's why they're not talking to me or responding to my text messages." We get mad. We get angry when we are ignored. And that's what was happening to this woman. She was ignored. And for most of us, if we were to be ignored today, you know what we'd be doing? We'd be like, "I'm out of here. This guy's not worth it. He must not be who he says he is." I'd say he just proved my bias here that, hey, I thought this was the last hope, last ditch chance, and everyone says he's just a wonderful guy, and he loves everybody, and he takes care of everybody, but no, he just ignored me. I'm done. But this woman did not let Jesus' ignoring stop her. As a matter of fact, she began asking more. "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. Help my daughter." She keeps on begging. And so she hasn't gone anywhere. Jesus is still standing there, playing on his phone, looking at Facebook, not saying a word. But here it's going on and on. It's kind of like the elephant in the room. It's like, okay, should somebody speak up and say something? And the disciples, they're like, "We got to do something here. You know, this is getting on our nerves. You know, maybe, you know, hey, Jesus, hey, why don't you tell her to leave? Say, be gone, woman. Get out of my presence." And the disciples are speaking up and saying, "Hey, she's begging us for her help. Tell her to go." I actually think what just happened there could be one of the worst offenses that somebody can experience. Because it's one thing to be ignored, but at least with being ignored, there's a chance, right? It doesn't mean that the sky is falling and everything's doomsday, right? There is a possibility something's good and that there's a legitimate reason why you don't have an answer or what's going on. But here you have the guys who represent Jesus rejecting you and not even speaking to you, but saying, "Hey, master, tell her to go. She's bugging us by all her begging." You see, another form of being offended is being hurt by the institution. The world is full of people who have been hurt, not by Jesus, but by those who represent Jesus. And they take that offense and they say, "Wow, I can't believe this could happen. Wow, how could somebody who says they love God, how can somebody who says they follow God, who is a person of God, or how can a place in a church, how could they do what they do? God must be awful. That's it. I'm done." Let me just caution you, just for a moment, with this. Don't ever, ever, ever project the nature of man onto the character of God. Man is flawed. It doesn't mean God is. When God calls us together to be a church family, when he calls those to be in leadership, to be responsible for our spiritual development, when he calls some to be pastors and leaders, we're all the same. We're all still humans, and we all still have a propensity for sin. I am not better than you because I hold the title pastor in front of my name. I am a human. I mess up. I stumble. The difference between you and me is God asked me to do this, and I said yes. And it carries a heavier weight and heavier burden, heavier responsibility. But we are all on a journey from the point that we accept God as in charge of our life to the point that we go see Jesus one day in heaven. And the goal of this journey is to not stay in one place, but that God has a desire for you and for me to grow and to reach new levels with him. And no matter how long you've been following God or how little you've been following God, no matter how young you are, no matter how old you are, God has something more for you. And the only thing stopping you from experiencing something new, something fresh, your next level with God, is this: taking the next step. Don't let what you've seen somebody do as they represent an institution keep you from moving on with God. Now, this lady continues on, continues begging. And you know what? If you stay, Jesus will speak. If you stay, Jesus will speak. Don't give up too early, too soon. She kept on. She kept on requesting, even when she is in the same room. Can you just imagine? I mean, she's there. Jesus is there. Jesus not saying anything. Jesus ignoring. And here's the disciples not talking to her, but talking to him about her. What is up with this woman? How can she handle this? Because you and I, if we're honest with ourselves, we're like, I'm on. I'm gone. That's it. That's not me. I'm not doing this. It's not worth my time. I'm a person. I have rights. I don't have to stand for this. But Jesus saw that she stayed, and so he spoke up. He will speak. But sometimes we may not like what Jesus says to us. Let me tell you why. The Bible describes Jesus as the way, the truth. Oh, sometimes we can't handle the truth. Sometimes we can't handle what God has to say to us. So it was the beginning of the summer when I was faced with the daunting task of finding a new worship leader. And I knew all the steps to take, that we would put an ad together, we'd figure out what we were looking for, and we'd put it out there online, and we'd collect resumes, and we'd filter through to see, is there someone here that's supposed to be part of Focus Church or not? And I began getting frustrated, because within the first couple weeks, we weren't hearing replies from anybody. Nobody was interested in Focus Church. Nobody was interested in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. I'm like, this is weird. And so what do when we're frustrated? We complain to somebody else. And so I bent Pastor Hope's ear. I said, Pastor Hope, I don't understand. This doesn't make sense. And the next words that came out of her mouth, I knew were from God himself. She said, you're supposed to fast. You're supposed to fast. If you fast, God will give you the answer. I'll even fast with you. Just tell me when you're going to fast. And I heard that, and two things happened. One, I knew it was from God. And two, I was offended. Because I'm thinking, there's a natural process to how this works, and how is me giving up a meal or two going to change the process of trying to find a new candidate to come to be a part of our church? I'm like, God, I know how this works. I'm not doing that. And I rebelled. And then what God did next rocked my world. Because then we spent 2 months with not a single reply to our ad, not a single candidate coming forward. Now, this was weird because I tried everything I know in the book to do. Everything about HR, everything in candidates, everything in headhunting. And here's the thing. It's not just that nobody was interested. That summary, so I was able to get resumes of people who wanted a part-time worship pastor position at a church just like ours who were willing to move anywhere. I found resumes, and I found a lot of resumes that fit that category. And as I looked through those resumes, because they had posted them on a job posting site for churches, I had looked through those, and I found about 24 of them who I said, wow, it would be awesome to have this person. And so you know what I did? I wrote them an email. And I said, hey, I think you might be the person we're looking for. Will you look at our church? Will you look at our ad? And will you tell me if you're interested? And you know what? Not a single person wrote me back. I mean, I'm thinking it'd be one thing if they weren't interested, but I was being ignored. I wasn't even getting that polite email saying, sorry, I'm not interested. I was getting nothing. It made me wonder that technology maybe wasn't working, that my email program was broken. So I thought, you know, I know better than this. I know technology. If my email is broken, then I'm going to figure out a different way. I stalked these people on Facebook. You think I'm joking. I am not, because I was determined to prove that I could figure out a way to get the right candidate for Focus Church, because I did not want months to go by and we don't have the right person for us. I want us to be able to move forward as a church. Yet I was also offended by God saying, you need to fast. Saying, what help is that going to do? And so I stalked people on Facebook. I sent private messages to people that they had to receive. There was then, I wasn't getting responses then. No one responded. You'd think I'd give up. But you know what I started doing? I looked through resumes and saw they put their cell phone number. And I'm not as bold enough to call them, but you know what I did? I texted them. You know how many people responded to their texts? Zero. And I find myself in a spot that because Jesus spoke truth to me through Pastor Hope, I was offended by the truth and say, this can't be the only way. This doesn't make sense. That I'm going to figure out a way. I think God worked overtime to block every attempt of technology and ways of communicating to find the right candidate. And I found myself 2 months into it saying, God, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. It was a few Sundays back, about a month ago, that I woke up Sunday morning. But before I woke up, there was a dream that I had that seemed really real. I was like I found myself in this dream, and instantly I realized that, wait, I don't think this dream is true. I don't think this dream is real, but I'm looking at what I'm doing, and I'm sitting on my computer, and I'm writing an email to Beth, our administrative assistant and our office manager, and I'm instructing her that we have just hired somebody, and here's their starting date. And I'm looking, and it's like, oh, we did? We hired somebody? And I began looking to see, what's their name? I know I'm in a dream. I'm trying to figure out, am I seeing a vision for the future? This could be awesome. And I think I'm kind of trying to concentrate on the name. I'm looking at it. I wake up, and I think I know the name. So you know what I do? I go on Facebook to see if that person exists. The crazy thing is, no one in the world has that name. And I'm like, God, you got my hopes up there. God, I need you in this. I can't go another week. This is crazy. And God spoke to me and said, Ryan, I told you you have to fast. And he spoke to me as clear as day that morning, Sunday morning. He said, if you will fast today, you will have somebody respond to you today. Now, when it comes to Sunday mornings, It's a big deal to prepare a sermon, to get up to present to you, to speak God's truth in a way that makes sense to you, and that takes a physical toll on my body. And so I'm very strict and regimented with my sleep schedule and my eating schedule and everything. And for God to say, you know what, give up eating. Don't eat breakfast. Don't eat lunch today. Spend that time, what you would have done eating, pray to me and say, God, have your way. And that's what I did. I prayed that morning. I fasted that morning. We had church. Amazing service. Move of God into church service. Afterwards, it was the day that the youth were having their big Water Wars party, and they were providing food here, and they're like, Pastor, you're welcome to eat food. And I didn't join them. I went to my office, and I just spent another hour praying, saying, God, this is for you. I can't do anything else. You've given me the instruction. I choose not to be offended anymore. I got over it, and I did it. And about an hour into praying, I realized, wait a second, I never checked my messages today. And it turns out an email had come in at 10:45 a.m., which had been in the middle of the sermon that day. And it was from a couple known as Noah and Megan Bullish, who are sitting right here. Okay? They are here today not because I'm following some weird thing and we've only got one candidate, but we've gone through steps to see, is this of God? We took steps to say, we're going to pray further. And we prayed a prayer, both them and us, to say, hey, God, if this is not of you, then you make it as plain as day. But if this is of you, then you make it feel right from the very beginning. And I loved when I had a phone interview later that night with Noah and with Megan. I love Noah's response to this as we said, hey, are you interested in going further? And here's what he said. He said, Pastor, here's what I'm going to do. I've got most of the day off tomorrow. I don't have to go to work to the evening. I'm going to spend the day fasting and praying and see what God says. And we invited them here, and we said, we're not going to invite you to come here and be with us on this Sunday morning unless we're 90% sure that you're the one God has for us, and we want you to be 90% sure that we're the ones for you. And by tonight, we're going to make it official. We're going to have an opportunity to pray this evening, this afternoon, see where God's at, and we'll make it official, and we'll find out if Noah and Megan are supposed to be a part of this family. But it had to be that I had to get over the offense of Jesus speaking the truth. Now, when Jesus spoke the truth to this lady, he said, I was only sent to help God's lost sheep, the people of Israel. Now, we know, and everyone knew at this time of what was going on, she was a Canaanite, a Gentile. And he's saying, hey, I did not come for your kind. I came for God's people, his lost sheep. And in that moment, he just made her insignificant. That she did not matter. And it seems that the word matter is used a lot today when it comes to offenses, right? That, hey, I'm offended about what's happening or doing. People matter. Hey, this group matters. That group matters. And I always wonder if every group matters, does no group matters? But it seems to be something, an offense that we take and we hold on to, where we say, hey, this is something where this hurts deep to the core, to say, I don't matter. I'm not good enough. I don't rank enough. I'm not special enough. Nobody wants me. And those are lies from the enemy, that when offenses like this happen, that we're like, yep, I knew it. I knew that was the case. I just knew I wasn't good enough. I just knew that I wasn't smart enough. I just knew that no one wanted to be friends with me. I just knew. And here Jesus is telling this woman, I didn't come for you. You're not my target here. You're not my mission. But what Jesus was saying in that moment when he finally spoke words, he wasn't talking about insignificance. He was talking about precedence. He was saying, hey, this is just how things work. I came here for the lost people of Israel. But it's kind of like he didn't finish. Here's a way that we can understand what Jesus was saying. Imagine today as you get up out of church today, you're walking out, you slip on a piece of the concrete there that's wet, and you twist your ankle. And so one of your friends takes you to the emergency room, and they're checking you out, looking at your ankle and seeing if it's swollen. Maybe they've got a bag of ice going on it and everything. And in the middle of them treating you in the emergency room, somebody gets rushed in from the ambulance with a gunshot wound. What's going to happen? They're going to quickly leave you. They're going to go over to the GSW, and they're going to take care of them, and they're going to be like, have fun with your ice. We'll see you in a little bit. I mean, sometimes we get offended when we go into the emergency room and we see all the people who get to go in front of us, and we're like, we've been here longer. No, I should be next. And it feeds this idea that we don't matter, that we're insignificant, that no one's paying attention. It's almost like we're invisible and nobody noticed that we're here. And so here we have this lady who is saying, Lord, help me. She's ignored. Then we have the disciples speaking to Jesus with her still in the room, saying, hey, those who are representing Jesus saying, hey, get her out of here. She's bugging us by all her begging. And now when Jesus finally speaks, because she's kept on saying, Jesus, help me, help my daughter. She's committed to this. That she's in a spot where Jesus says words that says, you're not as important for me. You are insignificant. And I don't know about you, but I might have been done on the first one. Maybe after the second one. But after the third one, for sure, it's time to pack up the bags and say, this is a lost cause, that I'm not going to get help here. And in this moment, she does something that she hasn't done yet. She bows down and she worships Jesus. Said, please, Lord, please, I worship you. I believe. There are some of you going through things in your life and you think God's ignoring you. You think you don't matter to God. And you're ready to give up and think maybe this whole thing really wasn't the way it was and I thought it was. As a matter of fact, we're seeing all these stories around Facebook going of prominent Christian leaders that are saying, you know, I was a strong Christian, and now I don't even think God exists. How does that even happen? Because we allow offenses to take root, and we believe lies of the enemy, and we stop and we face so many blocks. And yet, if we stay, he'll speak. And if we will get on our knees and humble ourselves and worship, what could happen? She was there worshiping Jesus, saying, please, Lord, help me. And Jesus speaks again and says, it is not right to take food from the children and throw it to the dogs. If someone told you that as an answer, what would you do? That is an insult. That is an insult. And here we need to understand culture at this time was that the way the Jews referred to anyone who was outside of their nationality, they referred to them as wild dogs, as dogs. That's what the words they used. They referred to them as dogs. And here he is. Upholding, here's what happens. Here's what we do. We don't give stuff to the dogs. He is insulting her. When we get to being insulted, sometimes that's the last straw. Now, there are some commenters on the biblical language who would look at seeing what Jesus said, and they would say, hey, we've studied the language, and you know what? Jesus, they're kind of defending Jesus, didn't use the normal slang, racial slur of dogs that meant wild dogs. He used kind of a different word. It still means dogs, but it was more kind of like a pet dog. Oh, that should make her feel better, right? It's still a dog! He's still insulting her! It's not right! When we are insulted, that's like when we are moved to action. Them's fighting words. And when you feel this way, let me give you a clue. Let me give you a one-word answer that will help you get over this type of offense. Ready? Ready for this? Hold on. It's coming. Pray. Did you get that? Pray. Not post. Pray. We're too quick to post, to air our grievance, to share with the world. Does anyone relate to me? And it's all about me. Look what they've done to me. But you pray and you say, God, I need help with this. And here's what you pray for. God, give me clarity. Just because it's the way I see it doesn't mean it's the way it is. And that's the nature when it comes to offenses, is that we think because I view it this way and I feel this way, this must be the way it is. And that's how we operate. We are offended. But that's not necessarily how the other person sees it. So we ask God, God, give me clarity. But let me ask you also to pray and ask God for humility. To say, God, help me to be humble in this. Maybe I've done something wrong. Maybe I've been the one offending. But there is something you've got to know. Something that puts this whole thing into a simple understanding. It's the main point of this whole message. We have to understand the difference between an offense that Jesus says is going to happen. It is impossible for there not to be offenses. A difference between offense and offended. And here's what the difference is. Offenses are events. There's something that has happened. But being offended is a choice. It's how we react to the event. We choose to be offended. It doesn't happen automatically. We choose that. But the offense is an event that has happened in a moment of time. Do you know what the answer is? Get over it. Get over it. Here is this lady who has been ignored. The institution has offended her, the people who represent Jesus. She's been made to feel insignificant. You're not a Jew, so you're not worth my time. And then she's been insulted. You're a dog. You're a dog. Why should you get anything? You're a dog. And in that moment, she had to be thinking, man, I have tried everything. I've tried and I've worshiped and I've begged and I've spoke up louder. I tried not to be ignored. And wait a second. He didn't call me that slang racial dog. He called me a pet dog. A pet dog. Wait a second. There's a difference between a pet dog and a wild dog. A pet dog has a name. A pet dog has a place to sleep. A pet dog gets fed. A pet dog gets cleaned. Pet dogs have a pretty good life. And she realizes this. She said, oh, but master, hey, even the pet dogs in the master's house gets to eat what falls off the table. If the master's having steak, the pet dog gets steak. If the master's having shrimp, the pet dog gets shrimp. And she says, I can get what you have to offer because you called me a pet dog. I have a place. I matter. And at this, Jesus said, "You, what faith she has. What faith that she can get over being ignored, get over the institution, get over insignificance, get over insult to get to her miracle." I want to show you a picture up on the screen. This is an entrance to a door at the Hyatt Regency in Orlando. We were just there. It's where we stayed when we attended General Council a few weeks ago in Orlando. It's a collection of pastors getting together for refreshing and for business. And I was meeting with another pastor, and we were walking back to the hotel, and we were walking across the street to this entrance, and there was another group of people walking in front of us. And they were approaching these doors, and you know, if you were to look at these doors, and if you could look at them clearly, you could see that in the middle of the screen, those are sliding glass doors. Can you tell that? I don't know from how far you're sitting, but those are sliding glass doors, the automatic doors, like at the grocery store, these are just real fancy versions. And we're following this group of people who are walking up to the door, and they're walking, and they're walking, and they're walking, and then they stop. And they're confused. And we're like, why are they stopping? And they look to the left, and they look to the right. And if you look at that picture on the left hand and the right side, do you see there's some silver door handles? You see them? They look, and they see those door handles. And they walk over to one of them and open the door and go in. And my friend and I, we're scratching our head at this saying, why did they stop? Why didn't they just go through the door? It's going to automatically open. Except the sensors for this door didn't activate until you crossed that dark line. You see that? And they expected it to open before they got to that line. And when it did not open, they thought, there must be something wrong. I must be going the wrong way. And they rerouted themselves to a different entrance. What did they have to do to open those doors? Take another step. If they would have taken one more step, the door would have been opened, and the rush of cool air conditioning would have flooded their lives in such contrast to the humid heat of Orlando. They would not have to touch anything. It would just happen. And my friend and I, we saw this, and we're like, that's what it's like for us. We got to take a picture of this door because we're going to use it in a sermon. Because too many of us, we stop too soon before we get what God has for us. We say, it should have worked before now, it hasn't worked until now, so I must be in the wrong place. I must be doing the wrong thing. Just because there is a delay in what God has for you doesn't mean he doesn't have something for you. If they had taken one more step. Jesus said to this woman, dear woman, your faith is great. Your request is granted. She was instantly healed. Not in the next hour, not in the next day, not in the next week, not in the next year. She got her miracle immediately. You know, I have no doubt that God allows offenses to be in our life because he has a miracle for us on the other side. That this is a way for us to grow in how we respond, in how we react. And he's saying, will you just get out of the way so I can do something? I had to get out of the way so that God could do something in us finding a worship leader. And God's looking at us, and he's looking at this woman. And you know what this woman did is that she had these things, and yes, they all happened, but you know what she did? She got on top of it, and she got over it. And what was waiting for her on the other side was her miracle. And maybe for you right now, there could be an offense that you've been offended by that is keeping you from seeing the miracle you're praying for, the miracle you need. And today can be the day that you say, you know what? I'm going to get over it. I'm going to stop it being a barrier, a block to me receiving my next from God. You know, through this whole message and this barrier with these four insults and ignorance and all these pieces happening, the miracle was always over here on the other side. It's always been here on the ground waiting for us to get over to the other side and point out that, hey, it's here. And the same is true for you. No matter what is going on in your life, no matter how bad it gets, no matter how hard it gets, don't stop short of what God has for you. Hear me saying, just take one more step. Get over yourself. Get over that offense. Get over what happened. It's not worth it. Her daughter was instantly healed. In Proverbs chapter 18, verse 21, the Message translation, it says this. It's on your notes at the bottom. Sensible people control their temper. They earn respect by overlooking wrongs. Other translations say that people who are smart get over offenses. What would it look like if a church family stopped being offended? What could God do? I mean, imagine all the people in this room. If we stopped being offended, what could God do? God could do a whole bunch, but it starts with you and it starts with me. We decide. I want you to bow your heads and close your eyes at this time. This is a moment for us to just take a time out and say, God, I'm giving these next few moments to you. I believe he's been speaking. I believe he's been tugging on your heart. He's been showing you something. I think some of you in this room right now are a little surprised because God's pointed out through the duration of this message that you have been offended by something and didn't even realize it. And it's keeping you from what God has for you next. Today can be the day that you say, I'm getting over it. No matter what it is, you decide, I'm getting over it. That woman decided through multiple offenses happening at the same time through Jesus himself and his disciples. And she said, I'm getting over it. I'm getting over it. God, I need what you have for me. So let me pray for you, God. All around this room, there are people who you are speaking to, who you are tugging on their hearts. You're saying, will you get over it for what I have for you? God, I believe you got something for each and every one of us. You do not hold back. We are not insignificant to you, God. You are not ignoring us, God. It doesn't matter what has happened. You're saying, will you want me more? Will you give up? God, I believe there's some of us who have given up. God, I pray that today is the day that we start again. That we are able to say, yes, God, whatever you want. That whatever that next step, I'm getting over that hurdle. I'm getting over that block. I'm whatever it is, that maybe I need to get on my knees and I need to worship today. To say, God, I'm not letting go until you give me what you got. Maybe you're feeling that God is far from you today. God is near and he is here today for you. He has not gone any place. The Bible says he will never leave you nor forget about you. And he's saying, I'm right here. But you felt like he's far, far away. And he said, he's ignoring me. Will you let that feeling keep you from what God has for you? Will you get over it? So God, we give the next few moments to you as we're going to spend a time in worship, a time in seeking you. God, I'm excited for the changed lives that will take place here today, Lord, as we begin something new, as we begin to even change our church because of what we're changing about us, and we're taking our next step with you, and that involves getting over being offended. You said we're always going to have offenses. But we choose whether or not to be offended. Help us, God. And as everyone's still praying and bowing their heads with their eyes closed, let me just ask this question. You may be here and you would say, Pastor, I don't even know where to begin with God. Let me tell you how. It starts with turning your life over to Him and saying, I'm done trying to play out my life story. I've already figured out that I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I can't try hard enough. You see that emptiness you feel inside, the hopelessness you feel, the emptiness. It's because you were designed to be in relationship with God Himself. He wants you to be a part of His family. He wants you to say, hey, God, I want you to be in charge of my life. It can be the beginning of something new, a relationship with Him where He gives us fulfillment. He gives us hope. He brings focus to our life. He puts us on mission, that we have a purpose. There is a reason why you exist. You would not be here except that God said, I want you here today. You are not hearing these words today except that God wanted you to hear these words. And He wants you. And He's saying, will you decide? Will you give it to me? Will you give me your burdens? Will you give me your pain? Will you give me all the problems? Will you give me the offenses? Will you give it all to me and allow me to do something special with it? Today can be the first day of something amazing for the rest of your life. God's not done with you. God says He's got a plan and a purpose for you to give you hope and a future. He brings focus to our lives. He puts us on mission. He uses us to help others find Him. I tell you what, the Bible describes that when we follow Jesus, that it's a life worth living. Doesn't mean it's going to be easy. As a matter of fact, it's going to be harder. It's guaranteed. There are going to be offenses, but He's saying, hey, your life matters to me. You see, your life mattered so much that someone would have to pay the price for everything that you have done wrong and will do wrong. And He loved you so much that He sent His Son Jesus to pay the price for you. Jesus said Himself, He said, God loved the world. He loved you so much that He sent His Son to pay the price, not to condemn the world, but so that the world through Him might be saved. Today's your opportunity. If you would say, Pastor, I need you to pray for me. I want to start that new life with Jesus today. Will you let me know by just lifting your hand up? Let me pray for you today. Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to invite you to pray, repeating after me. I'm going to ask everyone to pray, repeating after me. No one prays alone here at Focus Church. This prayer of commitment, say, God, I'm sorry for everything I've done. I want you in charge of my life. I believe you love me so much. You sent your Son Jesus to pay the price for me. I want to live for you. Give me hope. Give me purpose. Put me on mission. Bring focus to my life. In Jesus' name.